I'm very excited today to be in Bristol with Derek Chedzi, who's agreed to see me at quite short notice. So thank you very much, Derek.
It's a pleasure.
Now, what's your current job title?
My current job title is I'm Diocesan Canon and Director of Ministry Development.
Okay, and what's your job title about to be shortly?
Archdeacon of Hereford.
Wow.
So, all change.
All change. It's very exciting. The first standard question is, where and when did we first meet?
I was thinking that it's probably either safeguarding training that you would have done, mm-hmm. or in a conversation around one of your many curates.
I think it might even have been a curate training, incumbent training
for curates. I was going to say, because I know when you arrived, you inherited a couple of ordinands in training, one of whom went off elsewhere, but two of whom have come back to you. And there would have been training for you at that point, as well as getting them ready. So I'm guessing it would have been around when you first started.
So, yeah. So, was 2008, 2009.
Yes.
So, tea drinking project. Do you drink tea?
All the time.
Excellent. That's a good answer.
I'm married to a Welsh woman, Claire. There is always tea on the go in our house. I don't think there's ever a moment when the teapot is empty. Coffee, not so much.
Okay.
But there's always tea on the go in our house.
And what is your favourite cup of tea, either type or time of day? Or
if it was left entirely up to me, it would be gunpowder tea, which I really like, but no one else seems to. Otherwise, it's Miles West Country, which just suits the Bristol water. It's a special blend that Miles do for those of us who live in the West Country.
I don't think I've ever had that. I should keep my eye out.
Well, Miles is a really good tea company. If you like tea, Miles is the place to look. It's a local Porlock-based tea distributor and blender.
Right. I shall keep my eye out for some Miles tea. The big theological question, which is the main question, is how do you respond to the statement Christianity in the UK is not dying but sleeping?
I think it's really an interesting way of thinking about things. I'm based at the cathedral as part of my role, and in the cathedral you would not even think it was sleeping. Actually, we have no shortage of people wanting to come in and ask questions about faith. Congregations are good sizes, and cathedrals are one of those areas in the Church of England that are statistically growing, whatever that might mean. But I think if you look at the broader picture, and I think going to Hereford, which is going to be a very rural diocese, and thinking about the rural parts of our own diocese here in Bristol, I think there are a lot of people who've got a lot of time for the church but don't access us through worship on a Sunday. And in that sense, I think if you're talking about, is there a groundswell of people who have faith, who would call themselves Christians, who don't attend church, I think there's a bigger proportion than we realise. Some of those will be people who used to go, and lifestyle and ways of worship have changed for them. People are often on a journey. I think increasingly people don't need to attend all the time, and so many of our attendance figures are based on regular attendance. And in that sense, I think the Church of England in particular, and Christianity in particular, there are a lot more adherents than both will publicly own up to it. And even if they wouldn't claim to be followers, they're perhaps what the Book of Acts refers to as God-fearers. They have an understanding of faith, but they don't want to put a label to it. And I think in that sense, there's an enormous potential out there, and it is a bit of a sleeping giant. I think the problem we have is, how do we connect with those people? I think most people, regardless of their faith position, are quite happy to access something at Christmas. I think a really good example of that from the cathedral, which I think is exciting. For the first time this last year, so Christmas 2017, during Advent, the cathedral put on a toddler nativity service, and they'd planned for about 8,500 people to turn up. They ended up with over 800 mums and toddlers. They actually had to turn people away. And what was interesting was most of those people did not regularly attend church, but they wanted to come somewhere where the Christmas story was going to be told without any bells, whistles, extra animals, including crabs and lobsters, in a safe environment. And it was really interesting that they were just completely overwhelmed by the number of people who wanted to hear the Christian Christmas story unadulterated in an accessible way. And if that's people sleeping, which I think would fit that question, then I think there's a lot of people out there who are open to engaging with the church and with Christianity. So I think I probably agree with your statement. That's a long way round of answering it, but I think I'm thinking of, from my experience over the last 6 months and just my experience of doing this job and talking to clergy, I think one of the problems we have in the UK particularly, but in Western Europe, is historically faith and religion was done for you. So actually, as long as you knew there were some people in church on a Sunday in your parish, the whole idea of a vicar, vicarious, doing it on behalf of, and I think there's something in the psyche of the nation, and we saw it with the reaction to the recent royal wedding and the preaching there, that people will engage with the church and with faith, perhaps on their own terms, but the rest of the time they're content to know it's happening.
Yeah, it's interesting. I didn't do the figures for this Christmas, but usually we have about a third of our population through church during Christmas, which is huge fringe. But I wouldn't have thought that was atypical for a rural setting.
And I think that's the reality. And I think even if you would talk to more urban clergy, there are a number of opportunities during Advent and Christmas and other times of the year where people will engage with us. I think, it, particularly in the countryside more than the towns, I think Harvest Festival is still quite a big deal. And I know, talking to some of the folk where I'm going, and even yesterday when I was in Monmouth talking to the Archdeacon of Monmouth, was just saying that actually this period through the end of the summer into the early autumn, the churches are incredibly busy. Engaging with harvest, harvest suppers, harvest services, and the countryside will still engage with that. I think it's different in towns, but I think there are periods of the church's year where people want a faith experience. I just think we're not very good at tapping into that. And it's very much a consumer, it can feel very consumer led. We know what we want, so we'll come to Christingle, that thing with the candle and the sweets.
The orange.
The orange. But they wouldn't think of coming to church any other time, but actually that appeals. Things like messy church, again. One of the things I was very impressed with when I was at Yeats was both their messy church, which they did on a monthly basis, but also what they called Sunburst, which was a service that was slotted in at St Mary's Yate between the traditional 8:15 said communion and the 10:45 parish communion, which attracted a whole group of people who didn't normally access the church, a half an hour fast-paced interactive service with things to do, not just done to people. And people came. And people do come, and it's been a big success story for Ian and the team at Yates. And it's not traditional church. And interestingly, they get dads as well as mums. So there's something, perhaps it's the kinetic sort of side of it, that's actually something to do, it's not just sitting passively. So I mean, I think it's about how you tap into that sleeping giant and offering opportunities and doorways for people to access faith. I think the other thing is, and I think a lot of churches, and this is not a criticism of it, but a lot of churches have found things like Alpha very helpful, but actually if that experience is a good one and it's around small group and discussion and ability to disagree well, and then you put people in a church and you have to listen to someone like you or me stand up and talk at them for 12 minutes and there's no comeback and there's no opportunity to discuss what they've heard, there's a massive mismatch between what they've been offered in an exploratory course and what we're then giving them the opportunity to be part of on a Sunday. And I think we don't do enough thought around that, and that assumption that they can now join grown-up church because somehow they've made this step into faith. And yet we offer such a different model. I'm not saying that different models are bad, but I think we do very little to help people make that transition.
That's certainly been a challenge that we've found with Alpha. And what we're kind of finding at the moment is that some people who've done Alpha are now not really coming to church on a Sunday, but have transitioned into a home group.
Yes.
And that works well for them. And I think there are interesting questions about whether we ought to be writing that particular home group into our service book. Yeah. So they're big questions. So three specialist questions for you.
Right.
What's the best thing about being ordained?
For me, it's always been a relational thing, and it's about actually the great privilege of meeting people at key moments in their lives. I think we massively underestimate both the impact and the appreciation around baptisms, funerals and weddings. And for me, I really love those occasions because they're relational. You're meeting people at a point that they're open and willing to have conversations with you. And there's very few other roles where you get invited into people's lives at those key moments. And ultimately for me it's always about people, so actually being invited into people's lives at key points is it's a great privilege, and you have to be careful not to abuse it. But for me, in terms of being a priest, being a minister in the Church of England, to have that ability to enter into people's lives by invitation at those critical points is brilliant.
If you could change one thing about the Church of England, what would it be?
I think despite trying really hard, we still take ourselves far too seriously. And it's easy to laugh and say, but actually we do. I think our ecumenical colleagues know we take ourselves too seriously. Yes, we're the Church of England, yes, we're the established church, but we've had a historical right into people's lives. But the whole notion of everyone belongs to us because they live in an Anglican parish and we're the Church of England just seems to be very pompous in an age where people work by network. They don't necessarily think of belonging to us in the way we might think they belong to us. And I think a lot of what we do, we're more worried about getting it right and doing things properly than we are about building relationships with people. And I think in that sense, and I think one of the nice things about being at the cathedral and working with my colleagues there is, although we try to get things right, we do try and do the best we can and offer worship to the highest possible standard, actually we also laugh at ourselves. And I think the minute you stop laughing at yourself, you've lost the plot. And I think when you look at the way the church presents itself nationally, we get things wrong, and instead of admitting that we're wrong, we just say, oh, well, the Church of England, we're above these things. And again, the recent royal wedding was a really good example of actually where an Anglican from another part of the communion is able to come and preach in a very different style, in a way that people weren't expecting, in a very formal royal occasion. And interestingly, it becomes the talking point. Right. Whereas you might have expected the dress or something else to be the talking point, actually it's the fact that this Anglican Archbishop has come in and done something so different. And actually I think the great thing about that was he doesn't take himself too seriously. He had a message to give, and gave it in an accessible way. And actually made perhaps quite a lot of the rest of it look all a bit stuffy, dare I say it.
I haven't watched all of it yet, because it seemed like a non-sabbatical thing to do. So I've watched the first few minutes, and then I think, no, I am going to watch it again at some other point. I will go through the service. But I've seen snippets of the sermon.
But if you want a more down-to-earth experience of this, I would say, I think one of the things, and this is something I'm involved with in my work here, is the whole selection of new clergy. I think one of the things that I've noticed over the 15 years I've worked for the diocese, of which 10 years I've worked with curates, is the Church of England seems to have deliberately stopped selecting eccentrics. It's almost like we put up a sign that if you're slightly out on the edge, you're not wanted here. It feels sometimes like we've become quite corporate and quite business-like. Now, some of that's quite important. I mean, we do need to take things like safeguarding, those sort of things, seriously and be business-like about them. The Church has got those massively wrong in the past. I'm sure we'll get them wrong in the future as well. But I think if you tighten selection criteria to such an extent that you miss out on some of those great characters of faith, then the message we give is that actually we're interested in a very particular sort of person, and if you don't fit that, thank you very much, we don't want you. And I think, for me, I think some of the character of the sort of people we used to select is being lost. Now, you don't want too many of those. I mean, and in one sense, you don't want to reinforce the stereotype of the sort of Dad's Army style vicar or the Derek Nimmo style vicar. That's not what I'm talking about. But I think we don't have those larger-than-life characters like we used to, are prepared to stand up and disagree with the bishop or even the archbishop and just be a bit different. I mean, there are a few still, but what I see is a move away from those sort of people being selected.
That's very interesting, and probably another podcast.
But I mean, I think it's just interesting that you asked the question, and I think for me it's a double-edged sword. If you get too many large characters, you can skew things in very particular ways, but I think we play safe.
Yeah,
as you say, it's probably another podcast, but
I think the expectations of competency do not necessarily go with eccentric characters. So if you want to select eccentric characters, you have to accept that they are not going to be able to fulfill all their competencies. So how are you going to sort that out on an institutional level? That is definitely another podcast. What things are you looking forward to about moving to Hereford?
I think for me, I've been here in Bristol for 15 years. I haven't done the same job the whole time. I came as a dual role minister. So I had parishes of Frensham and Winterbourne Down. I then moved to a different role in the diocese full time. And in the last 10 years, I've worked effectively doing the job I do now and become head of department during that time. I think after 15 years, it's probably long enough. It's probably better for me to go now before someone says, perhaps, Derek, you've done this job for too long. I think we all get stale, no matter how creative we think we are. It's important, I think, for the diocese and for me as an individual to do something new. I think one of the things that really attracted me about Hereford is I've had experience of working in rural communities in the past, both in Devon and in Buckinghamshire. In Devon, it was deeply rural. Buckinghamshire was commuter rural. It's a small diocese like Bristol. I'm suited to that sort of environment. But there's a real sense of God's call. And I think for me, there's some really exciting things going on in Hereford which just appeal to me. They're doing a lot of work with local mission and equipping people to be self-sufficient in local mission. So rather than having a big super church from outside with outside resources, they've said, how can we make our rural communities work? I think church buildings are a massive opportunity for mission. I'm passionate about using our church buildings creatively, and in a rural diocese with a lot of listed buildings, actually helping clergy engage with that and work with what they've been doing So for me, going forward, it's a new challenge, new opportunities to use gifts and skills I've either developed or not been able to use here. But if I had to choose one thing, it's a real sense of calling. It's the right timing, and it feels that God's hand is on it. And it's easy to say that. We live in a world now where you have to apply for jobs and competitive interviewing and all of that. But there was a real sense throughout the process that I felt that sense of God saying, actually, this is the place I need you to be for the next stage of ministry. And so I'm really excited. There's some really exciting things going on in Hereford. I should be sad to leave Bristol. I've got a lot of friends here. I know how everything works. So I'm thinking to myself, I'm about to move into conscious incompetence. And recognise there's a lot to learn, but it's a really exciting and fresh challenge.
The last question is always, what's your favourite thing that begins with T?
My favourite thing begins with T. It's going to sound really silly. It's got nothing to do with faith or anything else, but I'm going to say it's TARDIS.
TARDIS.
There you are. I'm sure no one else has said that.
no one else has yet.
It's really interesting. Someone spotted on my desk this morning, I've got a calendar and it's got a TARDIS on it. And I'm a great fan of Doctor Who, have been since I was very small. I love science fiction generally, but a soft spot for Doctor Who. So my favourite thing would be the TARDIS. And I think, actually, wouldn't it be great if we all had access to one? We could all go back and see different things. We could perhaps undo some of the stupid mistakes we made ourselves. Just that, it's just a brilliant idea.
Thank you ever so much, Derek.
It's okay.